Blog Talk Radio. There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold.
You're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen.
Who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his own.
This is the show where Christians share their walk from darkness down a sometimes long and lonely path to the light of healing and fulfillment through faith.
Seek out the hopeless, confused and torn, and hold out your candle for all to see. Take your candle and go light your way.
Right here on Blog Talk Radio. Good morning and welcome to this 18th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, January 12th, 2016. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we talk about the shadows that creep across the paths of our lives at one time or another, in the form of such difficult circumstances as abuse, divorce, addiction, fear, debt, heartbreak, guilt, loss of a loved one, and rejection. Conversely, my guests shed light on those dark times with messages of hope, healing, success, perseverance, faith, and love. In case you tuned into the show and you're unable to stay with us, I'd like to let you, for the hour that we'll be broadcasting, I would like to let you know where you can find it again. I have a website, and it is Patty Sheen. I'll spell that out for you, PattiSheene.com. On the very first page of the website, you will see a link to this show. I also have a Blog Talk Radio tab, and under that tab are several pages. One of them is the show of the week. And this show will be featured up until next Monday when I change it out for next week's show. But I also have an archived shows page for Step Into the Light. And each of the shows that we have broadcast since September are found there with a direct link to them. So we'd love to have you come back if you can't stay with us this morning and check out some of the other shows that we have broadcast as well. I also have a Step Into the Light Facebook page. Come on over and like me there. I have a Twitter account. My Twitter account is at Patty Sheen, and I enjoy followers, and I try to follow back as soon as I get a chance. I'm a little bit behind with all of my notifications that I've gotten for followers lately, and if you're out there and wondering why I haven't followed you back, I'll get to it, I promise. I also have a Pinterest account, and on that account I have a board that features my radio show guests, so come on over and visit. Well, every week I thought it would be a little bit fun to talk about something in my life that was a little special for me. Last week I talked about a short text conversation with my granddaughter that was fun. This morning I want to talk about a club that I belong to. It is called the Southside Club, and I was asked to join it, I want to say, about 4 years ago. My neighbor, whose family used to own the property that our house now sits on, invited me into it. The interesting thing about the Southside Club is that this past Saturday we celebrated our 95th anniversary. And that's quite a milestone. Of course, many of our members are getting up there in years, but it's encouraging to know that we had two new younger members who signed up who became members of the club on Saturday. So I hope that it continues to go on for a long time to come. We meet every other month, and we have a different planned activity for each meeting. In March, we will do a seed and plants exchange. Each of us is to bring some kind of seeds or some kind of plant, and we do that after our business meeting. In May, we have a hobo breakfast. In July, we do a picnic. In September, we have a, goodness, I can't remember what our September meeting is. That's terrible. And then in November, we have Thanksgiving dinner. So it's a really enjoyable club, and I felt honored to be invited into it. And that was just kind of a special moment to listen to the ladies talk about what life was like back in our community way back in the day when they were young people, and they were coming to the club meetings with their parents. So it was just kind of a fun couple of hours in my life this week. Well, I want to introduce our guest this morning. We have a really neat show planned for you today. Debbie Hardy is CEO, that's Chief Encouragement Officer, of Stepping Through Life. Debbie has encountered more than her share of shadows that have darkened the path of her life, including poverty and abuse in childhood, divorce, widowhood, and a two-decade delay in the pursuit of her goal and dreams. Stay with us right here at Step Into the Light on Blog Talk Radio with Patty Sheen to learn how Debbie found her way back to light and is known as the Queen of Resilience. Debbie is an author and speaker who says she is younger at 60 than she was at 39. We are definitely going to pick her brain about how she accomplished that. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you, Patty. Glad to be here.
Debbie, I can hear you chuckling in the background. I can practically see your face. Debbie is one of these people that when you meet her and she walks into a room, she just lights up the whole place. She's just amazing. I just love her. I met Debbie at a writer's conference back some years ago.
Mm-hmm. You're and we have a great time together. We have a great time whether we're on the phone together or in person. It's fun, yes.
Yes, exactly. Debbie, as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, you have experienced very many unpleasant and difficult situations in your life, and one of the hardest was, I would probably say, the loss of your husband to cancer. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through that time and how you learned to be comfortable living your life alone, because you had been in a partnership for quite a while?
Yes, and it is totally different to live alone after you've had a good marriage. My first marriage ended in divorce, and so I was glad to be alone after that. My second marriage was wonderful, and it wasn't by choice that I was alone. So it's different.
Exactly.
But part of it is you just make up your mind every day, this day is going to be better than yesterday was. You wake up in the morning and you don't wallow in what happened in the past. Obviously, you have memories. Obviously, you're going to cry. You're going to feel grief. You're going to sorrow. In fact, it's been 7 years, and I spoke to a group on last week, and when I was talking about Brian, the tears came, and I'm thinking, it's 7 years, I should be over it, but no, the pain never really goes away, it just gets less. And so you just make up your mind every morning, okay, this day is going to be good, and you start out with the right attitude. It took me about a year to not be angry at God for taking Brian, and so you have to work through that. Do you want me to tell you how I did that?
Please do.
Okay. Well, I would walk around my house. I went to work a week after Brian died. I was back at work. And then I'd come home, and it was in the winter, so it was dark at night. And so I'd wander around my dark house, and I would cry, and I would yell at God. And this was a regular thing. I would do it 3 or 4 times a week, and I would just walk around and have this conversation with God. You know, why did you do this? Why did you do this? And after about a year, I was chatting with him, and I said, okay, I did everything right. I went to Christian college, met my first husband there, and that marriage didn't work. And then my son ended up in trouble, and then I had this physical thing, and then, you know, and then Brian got cancer and died. Why is all of this happening to me? I did everything right. And the answer came to me. You know how you sometimes all of a sudden your brain just turns on? Well, that's what happened with me, and the answer came to me, and it was like God was talking inside my head. And he said, my son did everything right. And if I didn't excuse him and get him out of what he went through, what makes you think you deserve any better treatment? And it knocked the socks off me. And I said, okay, I get it. Doing everything right doesn't guarantee that everything will turn out the way you want it to. And so you just have to realize that God's in control and that whatever happens, it's in his plan. He's never surprised by anything. Casting Crowns has a song that has just come to my mind recently, and it's called Just Be Held. And the chorus goes, your world's not falling apart, it's falling into place. I'm on the throne, stop holding on and just be held. And so that's where I was. my world finally was falling into place because I had always wanted to be a motivational speaker. Author was never in my vocabulary. I had not planned to be a writer at all. But after Brian died, I had learned so many things about being a caregiver and that I wanted to share with other people. And that's where I attended a writer's conference and met you and then started writing. And from that came my first book, Stepping Through Cancer, A Guide for the Journey, which is a resource for cancer caregivers and patients so they know what to expect and how to handle it. And that, I have partnered with the American Cancer Society on several occasions, and we've distributed several hundred, maybe even thousands of books now to cancer patients so that they know what's coming next. Okay, this
what
is
to
what's
expect.
Happening.
Mm-hmm.
What to expect and how to handle just practical information. So God said, so that's how my life has now fallen into place. And now I can help people who are going through all the rotten things that I've gone through and help to show them that there is life on the other side.
And what a blessing you have been to so many people, Debbie. And if the circumstances hadn't occurred, you probably, God could not have used you in that way.
Right, right.
So
I write devotions for Christian. I write devotions for ChristianDevotions.us, and I wrote
yes,
one on
yes, I love
there.
Them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love them too. And so I wrote one on there that I got the most response from, and it was entitled "What If." Now I had a high school sweetheart, and I was thinking, and I found him on Facebook. I didn't friend him. I don't want to interfere with his life. He's been married 40 plus years, but I speculated, what if I had married him? And I kind of kept track of him. His wife was one of my friends in high school, and so I kind of kept track. And they've been together. They've had two kids. Nothing really bad has ever happened to them. And I thought, if I had married him, I would not be where I am today, and I wouldn't be able to help people the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up thanking God for not letting me do what I really wanted to do when I was younger, but for taking me through all these lessons that I've learned to become the person I am today.
That brings to mind, Debbie, I love the contemporary Christian music, too, such as Casting Crowns, but I also enjoy my country western music. And
oh, yeah.
One of the songs that I enjoy is Thank God for Unanswered Prayers.
Yes.
And that first, yeah. Basically the same thing, where the man sees a lady years later who he was sweet on in high school, and he realizes when he starts talking to her, they really don't have that much in common, and what would their life have been like. But I diverse. I don't want to.
That's
I don't
okay.
want to take away from your time, because let me tell you what, the time just flies on this show.
Yes, it does.
I want to get back to that loss, Debbie, and if you could share with our listeners, after loss of a spouse, what helps a person know when or even if they are ready to begin dating or become involved in a relationship again?
Well, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not going to presume to have the right answer to this.
Try. That's probably not fair. I'm just saying from your perspective.
Okay. I have some friends that we get together once a month for breakfast. We've been doing it, let me see, we started in, I joined the group in 1991, so it's been 24 years we've been doing this.
I'm so
we
jealous.
Get together once
my
a month
sister.
For, we get together once a month for breakfast, and two of the ladies in there lost their husbands within a couple of months of each other, and that was 14 years ago. And so all three of us had a different reaction to the loss of our husband. We were all devastated. We all mourned and everything. One of the women, the minute her husband died, she went into her bedroom, took off her wedding ring, and put it in her jewelry box. She said, I'm not married anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Another woman wore her wedding ring for 10 years. And then her son said, you know, Mom, it's okay. You can take the ring off now. I wore mine for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it just depends. When you can finally put the ring away and not have an attachment to it, not feel like you have to wear it, then you need to be okay with yourself. You need to like yourself first before you can invite someone else into your life. Otherwise, you're not being honest with the other person. So you need to be comfortable with yourself. If you can't afford to live alone, rent a room from someone. Find a girlfriend who will share a house or an apartment with you. Don't get married just to pay your bills. I've known too many people like that, and they ended up miserable or divorced. So don't get married just to pay your bills, but deal with what's going on inside. And if you, I would recommend you join a grief support group. If there's none around, contact your local hospital or a hospice in the area. The hospice that Brian went to had a grief support group, so my stepdaughter and I went to that together. And that helped a lot, just being able to talk about him and about what we were dealing with. So you need to work through your grief before you're ready to move on. And if you decide you want a date and you spend your first date talking about your late husband, you're not ready to date yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And it's an individual thing. I started dating a couple of years after Brian passed, and I've dated two guys since then, somewhat seriously, and nothing ever came of it. So So I've decided now I'm just happy by myself. I don't need a man. I don't, it's nice to have friends to go out and do things with, but I'm not about to compromise my life for someone like that.
And you already know enough to know that if that's in the plans for you, that God has got the right man out there and the day will come. It's all in
exactly.
His timing.
Exactly. On my first date with Brian, I still had two teenagers at home. I'd been single for 3.5 years. And I said, okay, I want you to know I don't need a husband. I don't need anybody to pay my bills, and I don't need anybody to raise my kids. But if you want a date, that would be fine. Well, he took that as a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
2 months later, we were engaged.
Oh, how neat. How neat.
So it could happen again, yeah.
Sure. Well, Debbie, I kind of hope it does for you because you're such a delightful lady.
Thank you.
And I know you do fine on your own, but still, I would love to see you in a loving relationship with somebody who is going to share your enthusiasm and your passion for life, because you definitely have it. That's just my little
thank you. Okay, now if there's any widowers out there in their 60s,
this is an ad for Debbie Hardy. Oh goodness.
Okay, this is not a Lonely Hearts Club, okay?
Debbie, in your younger years, you did, I don't know a lot about it, and you may not want to talk a lot about it, but apparently there was a fairly abusive relationship with your dad for many years. Did you ever reconcile that? And if so, how were you able to reconcile those issues with him?
My father died before anything was reconciled. He was
okay.
A nasty, nasty man to me, to my mom, and to my 5 siblings. He was just horrible. In fact, a lot of my siblings would only go back to visit mom, and when mom died, they quit going to see him. It was that terrible.
It was bad.
And yeah, it was bad. And I won't go into detail here, but I never reconciled with him, and I had kind of put it out of my mind. Didn't want to let him, control my life forever, so I just let it go. Some of my siblings couldn't. They held on to that anger and bitterness, and they used that as an excuse to become an angry, bitter person,
mm-hmm.
which can happen far too often. And people don't realize that when you hold on to that, you're not hurting that person. You're hurting yourself. And it turned into health problems, and it changed them physically. Their faces aged long before they needed to. In fact, when Brian and I got married, I was 44. My sisters were 47 and 55. The photographer asked which one of them was my mother. So, not good. Because they had held on to that anger, and it showed on their faces.
Such a long time, yeah.
Which is not good. You need to let go. Well, I thought I had forgiven him many, many years before, but Brian, a month before our wedding, he sat me down and he said, when you talk about your dad, this green smoke comes out of your mouth. And this fire blazes out of your eyes.
Goodness.
And I just smiled, and I'm going, so? he said, I will not allow that hatred to poison our marriage, so you have to forgive him, or we can't get married.
Wow.
I said, what? What are you talking about? I said, if I haven't forgiven him for 35 years, what makes you think I can forgive him in the next 30 days? Brian looked at me, and he said, that's not my problem. I was so mad at him, I was ready to throw the ring and walk out. But I said, okay, this guy's the best thing to come along in a long time, and I need him in my life. So I'll go to a bookstore, I'll get a book on forgiveness, and I'll read the book, and then I'll tell him I forgave, and then I'll worry about it after we get married. Okay, got it all worked out. So I go to the bookstore, and I found, now I don't know the author, this is not a plug for the book, but I love the book. It changed my life. It's called The Freedom of Forgiveness by David Augsburger. The Freedom of Forgiveness. I thought, okay, I never heard of that. Freedom of Forgiveness. Okay, I'll try it. Mm-hmm. I got about halfway through the book, and all of a sudden it clicked that forgiveness has nothing to do with my dad. It has everything to do with me. It's not saying that's okay, it doesn't matter, because it's not okay and it did matter. That's not saying I let you off the hook. That's saying I will no longer let you control my life. What happened is in the past. It's going to stay in the past. I'm not bringing it with me into my present and my future. And it was like, oh, okay, I got it now. And I let it go. Brian came to pick me up for dinner that night. Now, mind you, I'd only read half the book.
Yeah.
I opened the front door. Brian looked at me and he said, you forgave your father today, didn't you?
He could tell.
I said, how did you know that? He could tell. He said, I have never seen you look so happy and so relaxed.
Oh, my.
It blew my mind. So that's,
which goes
that's
to
how
show
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that we don't realize how much people can read us sometimes, especially people who
yes.
love us.
Yes. And I had no idea that I was carrying that around on my face. I thought, oh, I look pretty good. You know, I'm looking young. I'm feeling young. I'm doing great, you know. But I didn't realize that that hatred was showing. Yeah, until I let it go.
And I've often heard that when we don't forgive, the other person doesn't care.
Right.
The other person doesn't even know that you're angry at them 99.9% of the time. And if they did
exactly.
know, they wouldn't care anyway. So, yeah, we're mm-hmm. just hurting ourselves.
Exactly.
Debbie, with about 3 minutes to go before our commercial break here, you raised a family, which, of course, has its rewards.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, you did put a lot of your dreams on hold for a number of years. When you went back to the pursuit of what you wanted to do, did you run into any obstacles? And I know you talked to us at the beginning of the show about how you came about becoming an author and a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But were
mm-hmm.
there obstacles because you were an older person,
always,
shall we say?
There's always obstacles when you try something new. You always have to climb. You have to work hard. The biggest obstacle was my lack of knowledge. I needed to learn how to write, how to speak, how to do all of that. I could get up in front of a group and talk, but I had no idea how to plan a speech, how to plan a talk, how to do a PowerPoint to go along with, and you know, handouts, and how to write a book, how to put my words down, how to edit them down to get the bad ones out and keep only the good ones. There was a lot that I needed to learn. So that was my biggest obstacle. And so I went to my first writers' conference in 2009. I've been to about 18 writers' conferences since then, plus doing online classes, reading books, reading emails from other writers who send out newsletters and everything, learning everything that I could. That was the biggest obstacle. So when you want to start something new, if I were to start skiing, I would want to take a lesson. I don't want to go up on the top of the mountain and kill myself, right?
Exactly.
Right. If I want to drive a car, I need to take lessons. I don't just get behind the wheel and go down the street and run into my neighbor's cars, you know. You
sure.
need to learn. So take the time. And so many adults, they don't want to learn. They want to do, which is one reason if I teach piano, I will not teach an adult, because an adult does not want to go through from the basics, step 1, 2, 3, 4. They want to be already at step number 75 and sit
mm-hmm.
down and just play. So you need to take the time to learn. So that's my biggest advice. Take the time to learn.
You used a great analogy there, because I, as an adult, took piano lessons.
Oh, there you go.
I had some experiences. I had some experience as a child.
Did you learn
well,
the scale?
See, it's not
yes.
fair, because I had some experience as a child. I played clarinet for 12 years in our high school band, so I already knew
cool.
how to read and interpret music. And,
okay,
but
wait a minute.
I understand what you're saying, though, Debbie, because I look at our organist and our pianist at our church, and I think, oh, wow, if only I could play like that, I will never be able to sit down comfortably in front of an audience or a congregation
uh-huh.
and play like that, because these people have taken years and years and years to develop that talent. Me, I just wanted to be able to play enough to entertain myself, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I know
mm-hmm.
exactly where you're coming from, and I'm the same way. My issue, and you've probably dealt with this too, is with technology. I've had, what the heck is it called, Microsoft Outlook or something, email for years and years. I bought a book on it, and I still haven't even cracked the book. So I fumble around, and I try to figure out how to do stuff, and I get frustrated when I can't, and it's just crazy. And you're absolutely right. If you don't take those steps to really learn something, then you're always going to be wallowing in frustration, which is right where I am. Sometimes the tech stuff. Debbie, right now we're going to go to a short break. We have a couple of little commercials that we will run, and we wanted to let our listeners know what they are listening to. You're listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is the most delightful and fabulous Debbie Hardy. We will be back in about 4 minutes. Are you fighting what seems to be a never-ending battle to take off excess pounds? Have you tried diet after diet, resolved to banish the sweets and starches from your life forever, and fervently prayed for willpower? Author Janet K. Brown let God do the fighting for her, and she won with a 95-pound weight loss that she has maintained for close to 20 years. Now, Janet shares the lessons she learned with her devotional entitled Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness. Allow yourself to be guided through your weight journey with these practical and inspirational daily readings grounded in Scripture, illustrated with many of Janet's own experiences, and reinforced with a short prayer. This toolbox for overeaters combines a 12-step approach with a focus on the need for Christ as the center of your struggle. Janet's passion for diet, fitness, and God's Word holds the hope for you to achieve success as you strive to make choices that will lead to lasting lifestyle changes. Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness by Janet K. Brown is available at Penn L. Publishing, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. Planning a trip to Colorado this year? 80 miles southeast of Pueblo on Highway 50, you'll find the town of Los Animas, where rich early 1900s American history is preserved within the walls of the John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum. Since the opening of the new museum in May of 2012, the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County is proud of the accomplishments of its all-volunteer team. Exhibits depict life on the plains in the early 1900s through the replication of home and business structures and possessions of such historical figures as John W. and Dorothy Hogue Rawlings, Kit Carson, Ambassador Thompson, and Ken Curtis, who played Festus Hagen on the long-running western Gunsmoke. Artifacts depict the life of the Native American, rancher, and farmer, and showcase tools of such professions as the cobbler, railroad worker, medical professional, and military. The Grand Hall on the second floor includes several quilt exhibits and an independent order of Oddfellows exhibit. The Old Trail Gallery features unique gifts made by local artists and historical publications of the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County, such as the Bent County Chronicle. The John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum holds a treasure trove of information for any history buff or historical author interested in events that unfolded in southeastern Colorado in the early 1900s. Located at 560 Bent Avenue in Los Animas, the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. Cost of admission is $5 for adults, $4 for children, 6 to 12, with free parking available on site. For further information, contact them at 719-456-6066. If you drop by, be sure to tell them Patty Sheen of Step Into the Light sent you. Would you like an ad for your business, new book, or other product broadcast on Step Into the Light? Contact Patty Sheen at patty.sheen@gmail.com. That's patti.sheen@gmail.com. Now it's time to return to our show. Welcome back to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio with Patty Sheen. Today our guest is Debbie Hardy. Debbie has been through some pretty tough times in her life, and this morning we have been talking about that, and she also has ways to help us, as well as ways that she has found her way back into the light. Before we proceed, though, I would like to tell you where you can find Debbie. She has a website, which is entitled Debbie Hardy, and I'll spell that out for you, DebbieHardy.com. And you know, I'm just going to put this in here as an aside. It wasn't until just recently when I heard this on a late-night talk show that you don't have to put www into the search bar anymore. Isn't that crazy? My granddaughter would just, she would be rolling on the floor laughing if she knew that.
You want to know something else, Patty?
Isn't that crazy?
Something else that I learned. If you type the first part, it's Debbie Hardy, Debbie with an I-E, Hardy with the Y. That's how I help people remember. You type that all in one word. You don't even have to type the .com. You hit Control and your Enter key, and it adds that .com and goes to the page. So there's another shortcut for you.
Something new that I didn't know either. That is cool.
Yep.
How about that? There you go. See? Listeners, you need to listen to this show. You never know what kind of tips you're going to hear.
Yes. And we can learn technology. Doesn't matter how old we are, Patty. We can do it.
I know. Debbie also has a Facebook page. And once again, just go to the search bar on Facebook and type in Debbie Hardy and she will come up. She also has a Free to Be Fabulous page. And that is the title of one of her books that we'll talk about here shortly. And she also has a page for her Stepping Through Cancer book, which also goes by that title. So type in any of those and you'll connect with this fabulous guest that we have today. Also, for those of you who don't know, I used to have another show entitled Literally Speaking with a ministry partner back at the beginning of 2015. We ran that for about 6 months, and Debbie was my guest on that. And I have on my website, I have a website and social media information page under that Blog Talk Radio tab, so I will put the link to that show on there too if you want to listen to the interview we did with Debbie that day. She spoke quite a bit more. We focused quite a bit more, huh, Debbie, on your writing and your books and such in that interview. It had a little bit of a different focus than this one, so don't feel like you're going to be hearing the same thing over again if you listen to that show. I would like to have you listen to it, and you'll just learn a different aspect of Debbie.
And trust me, Deb, if you have two conversations with me, they're going to be different, okay?
Yes, exactly. You're such a diverse person. Debbie, we talked about some of the adversities that you have experienced in your life, some of the hard times, the rough patches, the shadows that have crossed your path. How have all of these things affected your faith?
Well, I was raised in the church. My earliest memory is sitting in the second row. We always had to sit near the front to be sure that we got everything that God had for us. So I'd sit in the second row, you know, and you'd try not to wiggle and all that. And we learned about the love of God and that Jesus loved me and everything. And then we'd go home, and behind closed doors, my father was a different person. And it was hard for me to realize that. And everybody talks about a loving father. God is your loving father, and he's just like your father. And I had a hard time accepting that. And so I came to faith because of an evangelist that came and preached hellfire and brimstone. I was scared into the kingdom. I thought, okay, if I don't, it's going to be worse than what I'm living with now. Okay, so I accepted Christ and invited him into my heart. And then every time my dad would do something, I would pray, and I would pray quietly. When I was 16 and he started to do something terrible, I prayed out loud. I said, oh, God, make him stop. And he took his hands off me, and he never touched me again. So God came to my rescue at that very moment, and I realized, okay, God, you are here with me, even through all of this rotten stuff. You've been here with me the whole time. And then a lot of other things happened, and I never turned away from God. I'm in church all the time. I go to Bible studies and everything. And when Brian was dying of cancer, I was sending out emails. At first I would call people and let them know this is what's happening and blah, blah, blah. And then I had to repeat it to friends, to family, you know, and I was on the phone for 6 hours a day, and I said, this is ridiculous. I can't be sitting here saying the same thing to everybody with Brian in the next room. So I was on the phone when he was in the hospital, and I would stand out in the hallway and talk on my cell phone until it died. So when we came home, I said, I can't talk to people about what's happening with Brian where he can hear me. So I needed to send an email. So I would send individual emails, and that got to be overwhelming. So I would send one email, and I had to divide it up because MSN will only let you send to 50 people at a time. Then they figure you're spamming. Mm-hmm. I guess it was 100, yeah. And so I had to send 5 emails to get them out to everybody. But at the beginning, I was, you know, talking about this is what's happening, and we went to see the doctor, and we did this test and this test and this. And I said, when we found out that that Brian's cancer was inoperable and untreatable, and he only had a matter of months left, I sat down to write an email, and I started with, I don't know what I'm going to do. Doctor said this, there's nothing we can do, we're just going to sit here and wait for him to die, and where's God when you need him? And all of a sudden I stopped and I said, I can't send this out to people. I need to figure out where God is when I need him. And then I remembered, God was there when I needed him as a 16-year-old. God's here today, and he can help me through this. And so I said, okay, God, I need to have a word of hope or encouragement that I can share with my readers to let them know that in spite of what I'm going through, God's still here and God's still in control. So I said, God, you need to show it to me because I have no idea where to find it in my life right now. Mm-hmm. And he would give me a phrase or a sentence from a TV show we were watching, from a movie, from a magazine, from a book. I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy while we were in the waiting room for appointments and everything. And he would give me clips from that or from a song that I heard on the radio. So when I would put that in my email, this is what God told me today, people who read it were so uplifted by it, they shared my email with friends and family and their Bible study group and the ladies group at church and whatnot. And Brian was diagnosed in July, and he died 3 months later. By the time he passed away, I had over 1,000 readers because of that word of encouragement. Yeah, because of that word of encouragement. So that's where, you know, God, I said, okay, God, you know, rubber meets the road. Show me where you are, and he did.
And isn't that amazing the way he just comes to our side sometimes when we least expect it, and in ways that we don't always expect either?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't. And one thing I didn't realize, when I asked him for encouragement to share with my readers, I didn't realize that I had to have it first before I could share it. So he gave me encouragement and hope through all of that, too.
Excuse me. Debbie, do you have a favorite inspirational quote or Bible verse, kind of your go-to when things get tough, or do you have so many that you haven't really singled any particular one out? And
actually,
that's often the case with people, too.
Actually, I have a life verse. This came to me, I read it before I turned 20, I don't remember, somewhere in there, and it stuck with me, and it has been with me for the last years. Okay, the world knows. I turned 65 last month. Okay, I'm old.
Well, hey, I'll be there in July, so we're
there
together.
You go. Good. But anyway, so this has been my life verse for 46 years. Proverbs 16:9. And I quote this. It's in the front of my, is it in my fabulous book? No, it's in my cancer book. A man's mind, or a woman's mind when I speak to women's groups, a man's mind plans his road, but the Lord directs his steps. That means I can plan to go from Denver to Orlando, and I have it all planned out to drive to the airport, get on a plane, blah, 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 to get there. But I have to take that trip one step at a time. If something happens that I'm late to the airport, my plans change. That's where God is directing. God takes you each step. So instead of ending up in Orlando, I may end up in Seattle. You never know. Hopefully not. But when I was 15, I planned on getting married one time, two kids, picket fence, one husband, live until we're old and then die together. I had not planned to be divorced, to be widowed, to have a gay son, to have all these rotten things happen to me. I hadn't planned that. God took me one step at a time. And the neat part about it is he was holding my hand the whole time. So if I stumbled, I wouldn't fall. He was right there with me.
What's it, like I said earlier, it's pretty amazing the way he's always there. And they say when we feel like God is withdrawn, it's not he who has withdrawn. It's us who has withdrawn.
Right. And you know that you've seen that footprints quote where, you know, I was on the beach and Jesus said, you know, there's two
yes.
sets of footprints. And then where there's one set, then that's where I was carrying you. And where you see that long rut in the sand, that's where I dragged you, screaming and kicking.
Kicking and screaming and protesting, exactly.
Yes.
Debbie, I have seen on your website, and I have heard you say this to me, that you are younger in your 60s than you were at 39.
Yes.
Tell us your secret. Secret or secrets with an S?
Well, actually, Free to Be Fabulous gives all of my secrets. I've had people ask me for many, many years, how do you look so young? In fact, when Brian met me, he was 51, I was 44. And he thought I was 20 years younger than he, and I was too young for him. And I kept flirting with him and everything. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that's great. Yes. And so people have thought for years that I was younger than I am. And my personal opinion is that it starts in your head. It starts with your attitude. If you think, it's like Henry Ford said, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, or whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right.
You're right.
So whether you're right, yes. If I think I can, well, then I can do it. If I think I can't, then I can't do it. Same thing, if I think I'm old, I will be old. If I think I'm young, I will be young. And so it starts in your head, and it shows on your face, you know, because you've seen me, Patty. I smile.
Yes,
I
you do all the time.
I am happy to be alive. All the time. And people say, how can you do that? Well, because joy is different from happiness. My smile is from joy. And I listened to the Adventures in Odyssey program on the radio, and there was an episode on there once. Don't even remember what the episode was. But the quote that I got from there that I put in my emails many years ago, it says, happiness is a reaction to a set of circumstances, but joy is a smile deep down inside.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that great? Happiness
yes.
is a reaction to a set of circumstances, but joy is a smile deep down inside. And so I've chosen to have joy in my life. And, well, then another thing, I changed my clothes. I used to wear dark, dark clothes, and I was overweight, and so they were all big and boxy. I always bought clothes that were too big for me so I would look smaller, which actually doesn't work, because if you wear clothes that fit, even if you have a little bulge here and there, you look better. People will compliment you on that as opposed to wearing baggy clothes. I added color to my wardrobe. Instead of wearing navy and black all the time, I started wearing splashes of color. And, in fact, that's one thing that attracted Brian to me, was that I was colorful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my wardrobe now is mostly pink, purple, and red. And as
yes.
a redhead growing up, I wasn't allowed to wear those colors. So I'm having fun now.
Sure.
Yes. And so
you need to join the red hat club there, Debbie, with the red hat and the purple shirts.
Well, I do have a red and purple hat, but I've not joined the red hat. I have so many things going in my life, yes. It would
That's
be fun
lot.
To do, yes. But yeah, it's. But a lot of it is attitude. And then I used to wear very small pieces of jewelry. I would wear little tiny earrings so people could hardly see them, and just a little pendant on a chain, and my wedding ring, and that was it. And then I said, you know, there's a lot of jewelry out there that's fun, and it's not expensive. In fact, Charming Charlie and I have an ongoing relationship here. Every time they have the BOGOs, I go in and buy one, get one free on the clearance, yes. And so I have tons of fun jewelry now that I wear, just because I feel like I'm doing dress up. And it's fun. I've had some friends who say, oh, I can't do that. I feel like I'm doing dress up. And my comment is, well, what's wrong with that? Let's dress up. Let's have fun.
I need to spend some time with you, Debbie, because you know me. You've seen me at conferences.
Yes, we need to dress you up, Patty.
You do, because I'm a very plain Jane. I don't even wear makeup. I've barely started wearing some lipstick, and because I'm not used to it, I don't do it all the time. And when I do, I feel kind of foolish. It's just very uncomfortable for me. When I went back to Nashville for my niece's wedding, and my sister, of course, was out from New York, and they made me up for the wedding, and I was just so uncomfortable the whole time. Just have a hard time with it. And especially anything around my eyes. Of course, I'm very sensitive to my... excuse me. Goodness, a frog in my throat here. I'm very sensitive to my eyes because I have such limited vision. And my concern is always don't let anything happen to what little I have, I think. And so the thought of taking like an eyeliner pencil and coming toward my face with it or doing my eyelashes just is very anxiety provoking for me. So
okay, Patty, you live just a few hours away from me. Come on over and spend the weekend with me. Or spend 3 days in the middle of the week.
I may need to, because it's a very difficult problem for me. And the issue for me with jewelry is that I break out a lot from jewelry super expensive, and I don't have the money for super expensive jewelry, so I've kind of shied away from that too. I hate earrings. I can't stand something on my ears.
Let me share a secret that I learned about jewelry. I was really surprised because I would wear some jewelry and it would break out. I'd get hives from my earrings, from rings, from bracelets around my neck, etc. And I learned that I was allergic to nickel. And that's what a lot of jewelers put into their jewelry, to gold. That's why you have 14-karat gold, 18-karat, because the rest of it is nickel to make it harder, because gold is a very soft metal. And so I was allergic to the nickel that was in the expensive jewelry. Well, the semi-expensive. If I go really expensive, 28 carats, then I'm okay. But if I buy a pair of earrings for $50 to $100, my ears are going to break out. I have to go over 100, and I'm like you. I can't afford that, and I'm not about to spend that much money on a pair of earrings.
Yeah.
But if you do the cheap ones, they're made of stainless steel. I don't break out with those. So that's why I do costume jewelry. 99% of my jewelry box is costume jewelry, and I don't break out from it. So that's another free tip for the day.
Yeah, like I said, I just have a hard time. You know, I was noticing I've got your book up here, my screen on my computer, and I had been going. Of course, I read it once, but my retention is getting worse and worse as I get older. But I was kind of flipping through some pages, and one of the things that you talked about that I thought was kind of interesting, and you might want to touch on it a little bit. Once again, a free tip. Shampoo. That some people feel like they need to shampoo every single day. And you have explained in here why maybe that's not always necessary.
Yes, I had, and I wasn't aware of this. I had to learn this from some other friends in my writer's group, because I put in there that, you need to shampoo your hair every day to be sure that it's clean, especially if it's oily, blah-de-blah. And they said, no, you don't have to, especially if you have long hair, because the oils in your hair, on your scalp, will, when you brush your hair, they will spread down through the hair, which is a good thing when you have long hair. And so sometimes you only have to touch up the ends of your hair. Or you just rinse it and use conditioner on it every day. And then every other day use the shampoo. I was totally unaware of that. I've had short hair. Well, I let it grow when I was a teenager. And then when I got pregnant with my first son, I was 25, and the hair went shorter and shorter and shorter, and now it's really short, and I love it this way.
I do too, Debbie. So I got mine short recently too.
There you go.
Yes.
Number one, we look better with shorter hair, Patty. And number two, it's a lot easier to take care of. Yes, it's a lot easier to take care of. That was an interesting thing.
I'll share a story with you as to what prompted me to cut my hair, because I wore my hair long for years and years and years. And I mean really long. And I went to a writer's conference. And when I came home, I contacted a lady and I said, I don't know if you remember me, but we ate lunch together on Thursday and we talked about this and this. And she wrote back and she said, oh, of course I remember you. You're the lady with the long white hair.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, my goodness. Yeah, it was after that that I went and got it all chopped off.
Yeah, something you don't want to be known for.
Exactly. I loved your tip, Debbie, about clothing and keeping your closet slim and trim in the sense of only having the items in there that you need, because I am so bad about that. I have this huge, it's not really a walk-in closet, but it takes up the whole length of our room, you know. And I mean to tell you, there is stuff in there that I will never, ever use again. And I even had a section for a while that was the when I lose 20 pounds section.
Yes.
Needless to say,
I think most women have that. Yes.
Yeah, and in fact, and how many times? Go ahead.
And I have that on my schedule for Thursday. I try to do it every year. I didn't do it last year, but I have it on my schedule for Thursday to go through my closet. And let me just explain briefly what you do. You go through. You give yourself 2 or 3 hours, and you try on every piece of clothing in your closet. And you look at yourself in the mirror, get a full-length mirror so you can check out front, back, top, bottom, everything, and ask yourself, do I feel fabulous in this? Would I walk out the door today wearing this? And if you would accept that it's missing a button, put it in the pile to be repaired. If you would not walk out the door in it, get rid of it. And you just go through your closet, and you do that with every article of clothing in there and get rid of the things that you cannot wear today. Because if you lose weight, you can get more clothes. There's nothing that says you have to hold on to these so you can get back into them. But get rid of the ones that you won't feel fabulous. That way, when you go to get dressed in the morning, you know, when I put on those pair of slacks or those jeans, I'm going to be able to button it up and I'm not going to have a muffin top. I'm going to feel fabulous.
Exactly.
You'd be surprised how freeing it is. I taught this at a workshop one time at a ladies' retreat. And a couple weeks later, one of the ladies contacted me and she said, I did your closet thing, and I was amazed at how I felt. It was so freeing to not have these skinny clothes staring at me saying, ha-ha, you can't fit into me. And that way you know that everything in your closet, you're going to look and feel fabulous, and it just gives you a better attitude to start the day with.
And I also liked your suggestion for the put the clothes that you wear. What was it after you get your clothes out of the laundry, out of the washing machine, out of the dryer, hang them up a certain way, the opposite way of the way all your other clothes are, and then after a period of time, you'll know what you're wearing and what you're not. I thought that was an excellent idea too.
Yes, when you try your clothes on, hang them all so that the front of the clothes point to the left or to the right, whichever. So we'll say the front of it points to the left. So everything is facing the left. As you take something out and wear it and launder it, when you hang it up, hang it so that it points to the right. Just that simple. Everything that you do, you point it to the right. You can wear it again and point it to the right. Keep pointing it to the right. After a year, you will see which clothes you have not worn in 365 days. And there's more clothes you can get rid of. Yeah, just that simple.
Do you also do the, and I can't remember from your book, do you do the changing out of clothes for the seasons? Like me, here I am in that closet pawing through clothes that I will never wear for the next 3 months because of the temperature outside.
Well,
do you do that when you box up your clothes? And because to me that's kind of a pain in the neck, but there's advantages to it too.
Yes, if your closet is small, you may have to do that, and I understand. You know, I do have a walk-in closet. In fact, it's almost the size of a small bedroom, which is one reason we bought this house. I love the closet. So I don't have to do that. I do put all my woolens into a cedar chest for the summer so that moths don't eat them. And then in the winter, I get them out and dry clean them all and then put them in my closet. But I leave all my summer stuff in there because you never know. You might want to wear a sleeveless dress and throw a jacket over it. Or a sleeveless top with a blazer or under a sweater or something. So I leave everything in there.
Very good, very good. Well, I'm also, once again, I'm kind of looking through your book, and I want to make listeners aware. Well, hopefully we'll become readers of her book, I guess is what I had in mind, Debbie, is that not only does she focus on these physical aspects of becoming fabulous, but she focuses also on mental and emotional aspects, such as here she's talking about your beliefs and your values and holding on to the values that you have and standing behind them. So there's just a, I love the word plethora. There's just a plethora of wonderful advice in this book. So I would recommend that if you want to become fabulous in 2016, this is the book to help you do it. Once again, it's called Free to Be Fabulous.
Let me mention the basis for this book. A lot of people wanted to know how they could look like me. In fact, I have people who try to copy my hair, my clothes. It kind of freaks me out when I show up at church and somebody says, "Look what I did!" And
like,
you know, hey. Yes, it's weird. But I discovered when I was doing research before I wrote it, I discovered that most self-improvement books talk about changing what you look like, and that's it. They change your hair, your clothes, your makeup, but you're the same person. And so this book, I start with the basics of how I became younger, and then I talk about beauty, which is your outward appearance, your makeup, your hair, your clothes, etc. And then beliefs, what goes on in your head. And then we talk about body, keeping your insides working the best they can be, and then behavior, how you act towards other people, so that you can change yourself from the inside out, not just on the cover.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do I have it on, have the book on PDF, I also have a print copy, so I can access it anywhere. Anytime.
Yes, you can.
And I want to thank you for that, Debbie. Actually, I don't know if you remember, you sent my ministry partner and I both a copy of that book after the show that you did with us back in, I want to say it was in March or May or somewhere around there.
I think because the book didn't come out until May, so I had to wait until
the book came out
so I could send you a copy.
In fact, I think that was what prompted me to call you to appear on that show with that book had just come out, and I thought, oh, what a great topic that would be. And we had a delightful show just like we have had today. So.
Yes. Let me mention one other thing. Oh, go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, you go, Debbie, you go.
Okay, I was going to say, people ask me how I can keep a positive attitude when there's negative people around me. You choose how you let people affect you. You choose your response to them. I had a lady at work that was very difficult to deal with, and she always had a negative attitude. And she came over to my desk one day, and she said, "Let me tell you what happened today. I am so upset." I turned around, and I said, "I'm sorry. I'm having a hard enough time with my morale here, so if you don't mind, could you please just leave me alone?" She said, "Well, then I just won't talk to you." And I said,
Thank you. Good. Exactly.
I was very polite. She didn't talk to me for 3 weeks, and it helped my attitude tremendously. So you choose to.
And that's true.
So that's how you do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I read somewhere, and I can't remember where, it was years ago, I read something that said, always have a positive, make contact with a positive person in your life at least once a day.
Good. That's a great idea.
You know, because sadly, many of us have negative people in our lives. I mean, it's a fact.
It's so easy to be negative.
Circumstances, maybe I should say, or whatever. So, yeah. Right. Debbie, we are down to 90 seconds on our show. I hate to tell you that. Oh, man, I love doing this show, and this is the part that I don't like, is when I have to tell my guests goodbye. You have provided us with a fantastic show today, Debbie, and I want to thank you so very, very much. It's been a joy to talk to you, and I look forward to staying in touch with you. And I urge our listeners to tell others about the show because it was just great. So thank you so much.
Do we have time for 20 seconds? Okay.
Yep.
People say I'm a Christian. I should not have to be fabulous. And I say we should be like Christ. We should draw people to us. We should look and act like the person that they want to be, and so that they will come up to us and say, "What makes you different?" That's my whole purpose in doing this, is to make us more like Christ and make people want to be like us.
Yep. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. We will see you next week right back here, Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Once again, check out PattySheen.com and check out Debbie's information, her website and so such, which you will find on my website. God bless you all. Have a great week.
There's no better deal for $4 than the Wendy's 4-for-4 meal. Start with our Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. Made with fresh beef and freshly cooked bacon, crisp all-white meat chicken nuggets, natural cut fries, and an ice cold Coke. All for just $4. No one makes $4 sound as good as Wendy's. Get more for four. The 4-for-4 meal deal. Now at Wendy's. Offer includes small fries and drink at participating Wendy's for limited time. Prices may vary. Offer not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh ground beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.